Well, we can turn it around, and one of those on the forefront who's been trying to turn around awareness, turn around action, turn around our leadership on climate change and other pressing environmental issues of our time is a man named Ted Glick. I'm very pleased to welcome him to the Green Front. He was on my program Eco Talk on Air America years ago, a few times, I think, and just caught my attention because he was, I guess, recently arrested for an act of civil disobedience, and so gave me an opportunity to check in to see what's on Ted's mind. I think you'll enjoy hearing from him. He really has been on this a long time and just right on as far as his sense of where things are. So I wanted to get a up-to-minute sense of what's going on with stalled climate legislation. There's meetings as we speak today in the Capitol with, you know, all the horse trading going back and forth on cap and trade, take that out, put this in, you know, on climate change. And hopefully when we get some eventual bill, it won't be diluted so much that it will be pointless because we simply cannot afford to have business as usual. I'm sure you agree, Ted. Welcome.
Yes, thanks, Betsy. I appreciate it. Yeah, thanks for inviting me.
And you are with the Chesapeake Climate Action Network. I think, is that the group that Mike Tidwell is involved in?
Yes, I'm the policy director, and Mike is the founder and the director of CCAM. Yep.
Well, he joined us about a month ago, another one of my longtime favorite guests, when he wrote the book about Bayou Farewell, right? Before Katrina. He became quite prescient, of course, to those of us paying attention. And
that's a very good book. Yeah, people should check that out. And there's actually a new there's like a reprinting of it happening later this summer with a new foreword by Mike with this BP blowout disaster and everything else that's been happening. So it's worth reading.
I've been encouraging the producers of Crude Impact, a documentary about oil. They happen to live in my area. I saw them recently, and I said, you should re-release that film. It didn't get wide enough distribution, and it's so relevant right now. Let's begin. We'll certainly get to your arrest and your view of the current status on the climate legislation. But we have to just address what's going on in the Gulf right now. I don't know if you heard, but now two additional deaths have been reported. I guess cleanup crews somehow got into trouble. Don't have the details, but now the death toll is 13, and that's just the human toll. No one has begun to count the toll on marine life, not to mention the fishing and tourist industry.
Yeah, it's amazing. It just this tragedy that just keeps going on and on and on and on. Of course, don't forget the court decision that came down yesterday, overturning temporarily, looks like, the moratorium on deep water and any new deep water drilling operations for 6 months, which was, you know, not what it should be. We need a permanent moratorium on offshore drilling, certainly any new offshore drilling and moving to stop it and just to get off oil and coal in general. But it's it really is heartbreaking, and you just watch that slick of oil and where it's moving and wonder, you know, if it's going to, as somebody who lives on the East Coast, if it's going to come up around, come up this way with the Gulf Stream. I mean, it's just terrible. It is a very good thing that this hands across the sand action is happening, that I know Gillian Caldwell was talking about before I came on. It's very important during this time that people be out there visibly, publicly demonstrating that we just, this is the time. This has got to be the time when we make the turn, when we take the actions that really begin to move us much more decisively in the clean energy revolution direction that we have to go as urgently as possible. You know, it's one of these situations where it's a crisis. It's a terrible crisis. There's just, you know, it's just hard to know how many years really it's going to take before the Gulf recovers from this incredible environmental disaster. Hopefully, somehow it won't be too long. But at the very least, we need to make sure that this crisis does the job of finally bringing about the shift that we need, taking the steps that are needed, particularly at the federal level to get us off of fossil fuels this decade. I mean, we have to break our fossil fuel addiction this decade as quickly as possible.
And what did you think of the president's speech? I can imagine it was probably similar to most of us, which was started to go down that path, but then took a turn and then all of a sudden came to a screeching halt and
very general.
Kind of disappointed.
Yeah, very general. Specifics? Where were there are so few specifics in terms of what is needed, and he knows what's needed. When he ran for president in 2008, what he puts forward as his program in terms of what we should do. He says we should enact a 100% auction of emissions permits. If you pollute with carbon into the atmosphere, you have to pay for it. No exceptions, no free permits. That was one part of his program. 100% auction of carbon pollution permits. He said, take that money, return most of it to the American people in the form of a dividend or a rebate, and then you take a chunk of it, and you use that for green jobs, clean energy investments, energy efficiency, so on. And that, in essence, really is what the cap and dividend bill introduced by Maria Cantwell and Susan Collins, you know, a Democrat and a Republican from Washington State and Maine, that's the essence of what that bill is about. The same program that Obama ran on in 2008. I guess we, those of us who think that that's the best overall bill, it's not what we would like it to be in certain respects, but in general, it's a much, much better bill than the cap and trade bills that have been the leading contenders, I guess you'd say, in the House, actually passed in the House and also in the Senate. This is a good bill. The architecture is good. It's a very good architecture. This Cantwell Collins bill, the Clear Act. It does need to be stronger in terms of the targets. There are weaknesses to it, but it would definitely be the kind of move that we need to make it clear that we're going in another direction finally in terms of where we're getting our energy from.
Ted, you mentioned the House passage. Do you know that was a year ago this week? I happened to be in D.C., and I remember it was June 25th. Why? Because
that's right.
Those of us watching that very closely were encouraged by its passage, pleasantly surprised, really. But then, of course, Michael Jackson went and died that day and stole the headlines, and that's America for you. But that's why I remember the date. So here we are, June 23rd, I believe it is today, and that was on June 25th. Would you have ever dreamed it would take this long? And we still, by the way, don't have a Senate version.
Right. Well, you know, this connects a little bit with my arrest, because I was arrested when I'm sentenced on July 6th. That's when I'm going to be sentenced for my conviction. But the actual arrest happened on September 8th. September 8th was the first day that the Senate came back last fall from its summer recess. And very much on their plate was climate legislation. You know, the House had passed this legislation. It was now the turn of the Senate to get serious about what is it going to do? What kind of a bill, a stronger bill, hopefully, what were they going to do? And there was a relatively small demonstration that took place inside one of the Senate buildings that my organization and several other groups organized, and I ended up getting arrested for hanging a banner. It's almost 10 months now since that demonstration of ours on the first day that the Senate came back, and finally climate is on the agenda for the Senate, how much they're going to do remains to be seen, and there's no question but that all of the political pressure we can bring from below, from the grassroots, is really, really needed right now.
And what about support for your arrest? Are you asking people to perhaps register their complaints with the fact that you were convicted and that BP executives remain free?
Yes, we've had people writing letters to our judge, to my judge, his name is Frederick Weisberg with the D.C. Superior Court. And if people wanted to find out more, I could send them information. They could contact me, ted@chesapeakeclimate.org. Drop me an email. There's also information about this on our website, chesapeakeclimate.org, under the federal, F-E-D-E-R-A-L, link. There's a federal link very prominent there at the homepage, and you can find out more information there. We've had so far, we know of at least 200 letters that have gone into my judge, some really very nice letters, very good letters. We don't know what he's going to do. After I was convicted of these two misdemeanors, one was for hanging a banner. There is a law that says something to the effect that you cannot have signs, banners, posters inside Capitol buildings. It's kind of strange because, you know, on TV, on the news all the time, I keep seeing, you know, people from Code Pink and other groups holding up banners inside Senate hearings, and people aren't being arrested and, you know, put into jail for doing that. But
Diane Wilson, I think, was arrested. Wasn't she arrested for pouring fake oil over her body?
She was. That's right. Last week. That's right. And she's, you know, in the clutches of the law. I'm not sure what her status is, but she's.
I'm not either. I wrote her right.
Wrote her
right before the program to ask for an update. I haven't received it, which has me concerned. I hope she's not still in jail. My goodness, she was on the program.
No,
three or four weeks ago.
Yeah, no, she got out of jail, but I don't know what her status is. So,
By the way, I need to give a plug because she is such a character and such a great activist.
Yes.
She was on the Green Front. It's the only time I've ever had just one guest on my program about 3 or 4 weeks ago. Diane was on, so look for that link on thegreenfront.com because she's here she is a mother, grandmother of five, fourth generation shrimper, and as bold as they come, which I give you credit for too, and she is the co-founder of Code Pink as well, and she's just got this great Texas twang, and she says she was arrested once. I guess she was fighting the petrochemical industry years ago, and sunk her shrimp boat on purpose rather than face arrest. So she's the real thing, and I just love her style, her substance, and her accent. So check that out on the Green Front, the interview with Diane Wilson. I'm sorry, Ted, go ahead.
Yeah, no. Diane is wonderful. No, I've gotten to know her a little bit over the last 2 or 3 years. She's great. She really is.
One of my sheroes.
She really is. And her book, I think it's called...
An Unreasonable Woman. I have it right here.
An Unreasonable Woman. It's a wonderful book. It's incredibly well written and a real story of sacrifice and struggle for justice and with humor and everything. Yeah,
yes.
Diane's wonderful. So back to my case. So one of the charges that I was convicted of was, hanging a banner, and the other was disorderly conduct. And because I do have two other convictions for similar nonviolent civil disobedience actions from 2006 and 2007, the government made it very clear that they are reserving the right to ask for triple the maximum sentence of these two misdemeanors, which means that I could be sentenced to up to 3 years in jail for hanging a banner. After I was arrested and when I was arraigned, the government said they were willing to offer me a deal that if I pled guilty, they would sentence me to 6 months in jail. They would suspend 5 of the months, and I would have to spend 30 days in jail. And I said, I'm sorry, 30 days in jail for hanging a banner is not, that's not commensurate to the crime here. So I refused and went to trial, and unfortunately I didn't win a trial. Now it's up to the judge who, as I was starting to say a little bit back there, that he talked about my sentencing after the jury had reported their verdict and had been dismissed. And he said that on the one hand he understands it's nonviolent civil disobedience. It's not like I was... I hadn't murdered anybody or robbed anybody. I started an oil slick, or for that matter, violated safety regulations in a coal mine, leading to the death of 29 miners when it comes to Massey Energy in the coal fields.
Right, the predecessor for this disaster.
Yeah. But then he went on to say, however, you do have these other arrests on your record, and maybe you need to be taught a lesson, and basically made an example of, and there's no question the government wants to make an example of me. That's very clear. So I really don't know what's going to happen. I've been gratified by all these letters that people have written, some from some fairly well-known people on my behalf, so we will see. We'll see what happens. In the meantime, and I continue to do my work. If I go to jail, I will do my work in jail as best as I can. There certainly are people in jail. I've been there before during the Vietnam War, and for little bits of time with other arrests over the years. So I'll do my work there, talking to people there as best as I can.
And I hope you don't spend any time in jail. But if you do, will it still have been worth it? Obviously, you knew the risk of arrest when you did this, and I suppose that's part of the reason you did it. I mean, the whole point is to make a statement.
Yes. The thing that's fascinating, well, fascinating is not the word. The thing that's ironic about this particular arrest is that I was not a major organizer of this action. It was organized primarily by young people from my group and several other groups, like the Energy Action Coalition, and they asked me to come in the last few days and help out with this one part of the action, which was the hanging of these two long banners, Green Jobs Now, Get to Work. That's what the two banners said. And I said, sure, I'll help with that. And so I was one of the people who hung those, and unfortunately, two of us, you know, we hung the banner, and as we were leaving, the police, you know, arrested us. So, but I did not expect that even if I was caught in the act of hanging this banner, I really did not expect to get arrested. I was part of an anti-war demonstration the week that the Iraq War started in 2003, and actually with Code Pink, with a number of people, mainly from Code Pink, went into the same building, the Hart Senate Office Building, with a big banner. At one point, we actually occupied Tim Daschle's office at that point, the head of the Democratic Party in the Senate, calling for him to, you know, make a statement against this invasion of Iraq, which of course he didn't do. So after being there for a couple hours, not being arrested in the sit-in, we started marching literally through the building, through the halls, chanting loudly. At one point, we draped this banner over this railing in this big atrium area. It was the same area where I did this action with the other people on September 8th last year, and the police came, and they never said anything about, you know, we're going to arrest you. They said, you need to stop, you have to be quiet, follow me, and they escorted us out of the building. And that is what I thought was the likely response if it turned out that while we were hanging this banner, the police came, but that wasn't the case. I don't regret this in any way. I certainly hope I don't go to jail. If I do, I will do the best I can with it. You know, the world's really in a bad way, and we aren't going to change the reality of our world unless we're willing to take risks for what we know is needed. It's just that simple. We shouldn't take mindless risks. We should think strategically. We shouldn't be reckless, but there's no question but that risks are part of what we have to be doing. And I felt then that this was a good action, and I continue to think it was a good action. I mean, it's indeed. Here it is, 10 months after this action took place, calling
still
upon
no
the
bill.
Senate to move on this. You know, there's no bill. Probably something's going to finally come onto the Senate floor that maybe will be about climate. It may be just much more limited about kind of energy policy, but not putting a cap on carbon, not putting a price on carbon. You know, again, that's why this pressure from below right now is really, really important.
Not to mention that we have an Exxon Valdez equivalent happening every few days in the Gulf,
yes.
Continuing
yes.
Day 60-something. It is outrageous. And are you afraid that Americans are going to – I mean, it seems like it's either complacency, like problem, what problem? You know, we don't see anything. You know, business as usual. I'm too busy. Don't bother me now. I mean, there's exceptions. I'm talking about sort of the mainstream American who doesn't quite seem to get this yet to the point of making changes in their lives or their habits. Or demanding political action on these issues to crisis, you know, and now people are not watching CNN, it's too awful, and they go into paralysis and denial. Where's that space in between where we can activate, you know, and motivate and mobilize and catalyze the country? So it's not just the activists like you risking arrest and, you know, the green people listening to green shows like this, but really getting everybody on board.
Well, you know, it's not an easy way to answer that, but I think there is an answer. We know that millions, tens of millions of people really do want to see a different kind of a country. And we saw that on a really major scale with the presidential election in 2008. A lot of people voted for Barack Obama because they thought he was serious about change, you know, a much more substantial change. It turns out that really wasn't the case. Some changes have been made, but certainly not the kind of much more serious changes that get at the power of big corporations and powerful banks and oil companies and coal companies in particular. There's that kind of change has not happened. So, you know, people can... people are upset about that, depressed about that, very sad about that.
Do you think he believed it? He just got into the, you know, Washington D.C. smog, where everything is political and everything's about the next election, and just got diluted down in his convictions, or at least has to pretend that he is, or, is he just a really good actor like Ronald Reagan?
I don't know. I really don't know. I guess if I was pressed on it, I would say that I think he does have, pretty good instincts. I think he does, on a personal level, he would certainly like to kind of do the right thing on issues. But he has a history. I mean, his history has been one of kind of a climb up the ladder, kind of as a politician. And when that is the primary thing that you're doing, kind of trying to climb the ladder to the pinnacle as far as you can get, with the idea that then gives you the power to make the changes that you want, as distinct from really being focused on building a movement, building organizations, helping new people get involved, learn skills of leadership. It's movements. When you look at history, it's not individual people and individual leaders who have made changes. Sometimes you do have people who are presidents or who are top leaders who play a very important role, but ultimately their role is very much determined by the extent of large numbers of people pressing and demanding and acting and supporting the changes that are needed. Good leaders generate those movements and help to give them positive direction.
Absolutely, but I think it also takes, you're right, exactly right, and what I've maintained as someone who has, been trying to bring green content into mainstream media to reach the rest of us, the rest of America, is until people really understand the consequences and what's at stake for them personally, planetarily, nationally, you name it, for their kids, for their grandkids, they're not going to demand greener policies and politicians and products and programs and presidents. And so that's why it is so important to educate, to inform, and to inspire,
yes,
and to connect the dots. And, we keep hearing that where's the movement behind the climate legislation like there was for health care reform? And those of us who have been, and you even longer, I'm sure, in the trenches in various, aspects of the green movement for so many years, so many decades, are like, where is it? What have we failed to do here? Because Lord knows it's in everyone's interest. That's the irony. It's not about red versus blue. It's about green, folks, and it's not political, or it shouldn't be. It is practical. We're talking about everyone's ability to survive and thrive on this planet. And the fact that we're talking like this in 2010, mm-hmm, and that it's taken a year to get the Senate to act on climate change legislation, and that we have gazillions of gallons of crude, as we speak, gushing into the Gulf of Mexico and now going up the Atlantic seaboard, and we still don't have anything certain in the way of climate legislation. You wouldn't believe it if you can't make this stuff up, and yet it's not funny because it's potentially got, long-lasting and tragic impact and repercussions and impact on our children.
Well, this is a lot like slavery. This issue of dirty energy and the power of the oil companies and the coal companies in particular, and their kind of allied industries, the automobile industry, the train, the railroad industry that carries the coal. A lot of the money generated for the railroad industry comes from carrying coal. All these allies that they have. I mean, it's a lot like slavery. I mean, slavery was really deeply woven into the fabric of U.S. society and other societies, European society, British society, where they had slavery and so on, South America. And it took a long time for finally slavery to be defeated, to be transcended and moved on from. Now, of course, the thing about this issue is that we literally are running out of time. That's what makes this so hard, and I think that's part of the difficulty of people sticking with it on this, because the more they get into it, the more they realize this is just very serious and that time is running out. But
do you think that people, because they feel, it's getting back to that problem, what problem, to it's too late, nothing we can do. That collapsing of the middle there, where it's like, it's urgent, folks. This requires all of our attention and action immediately, and don't go to sleep again now that we have your attention.
Well, we need a balance. I mean, we definitely need to be challenging people, educating people, talking to people, interacting with people about how critical this issue is and how they need to be doing what they can in their personal lives and in terms of their being activists and bringing pressure to bear on our political system to get real on this. We absolutely have to be doing that. But we also need to be about building a kind of almost like a new culture, a new way that in our local communities, with our friends, with groups that we're a part of, that we're building a new kind of a culture that is about mutual support, helping one another to kind of stick with it day to day for the long haul. That's really essential because so much of the dominant culture just encourages consumerism, of course, and very individual approaches instead of kind of community approaches and building community. And we need to be about generating a different kind of culture. As there are climate disasters, in addition, you know, on top of this one we're in right now, we know that there will be any number of other climate disasters. That's just going to happen because of the changes that are taking place.
Well, and look at the news with all the storms, you know, continuing record tornadoes, killer
storms, floods, all of it,
flooding, Nashville, you know, almost drowning in water. You know, ironically, the home of our fearless leader Al Gore.
Right.
He's heading to Nashville this weekend for another summit. He's going to be training his graduates on solutions, and that's what we've been clamoring for. Besides changing a light bulb, Al, what can we do?
See, and that's where, you know, Bill McKibben's latest book, Earth. Right, spelled E-A-A-R-T-H.
Yeah.
It's a very good book, a lot of good stuff in it. And, you know, he doesn't pull any punches in terms of really
how serious
things are. But he goes on to talk about what he sees as the hope and what we need to be about. And one of the key things that he puts forward is we really need to be about building up local communities, local kind of alternative economic infrastructures, ways of getting ourselves better organized, better rooted, you know, lessening our carbon footprint, but also so that we're in a better position as climate change has happened and as we are hit by storms or whatever, we're in a better position to help one another and to recover from those and to find the way that we're going to have to live on this new earth. You know, as he says, we are really that there's no way around it. There are too many changes. There's too much carbon up in the atmosphere. You know, we may be able, hopefully we can prevent the kind of full-out climate catastrophe that, you know, is just, you know, you don't want to think about it, but it could happen if we don't move quickly on this.
And that's a little bizarre, you know, too, how some people are talking about the need to adapt, and I know Bill McKibben certainly is not saying that's all we should do. We should try to slow it.
At
the same time, there's people who still, you know, don't believe it's happening, and I just want to insert a quick piece of research. Ted will continue our conversation in a second, but this was in the New York Times yesterday. I don't know if you saw it, but yet another study affirming consensus on climate change. Recently, the studies have shown that more Americans are less concerned about climate change, which is very disturbing, and I'm sure you have some ideas, as do I, about why that's happening. It may have something to do with the right-wing nuts dominating talk radio, you know, dismissing us all as a bunch of wacky tree huggers, and we're the ones who caused the oil explosion, don't you know? I don't know what they say about the coal explosion, if that's the responsibility of Greens as well. Of course, I'm being study showing this is among scientists, climate scientists.
Right.
The results are pretty conclusive. This came out of Stanford. It supports the idea that the vast majority of the world's active climates accept the evidence for global warming as well as the case of human activities are the principal cause of it. Of the top 50 climate researchers identified by the study, and that's based on numbers of papers published because that does usually come with, you know, earned respect, only 2% fell into the camp of climate dissenters.
Right.
Of the top 200 researchers, only 2.5% fell into the dissenter camp, and that is consistent with past work, including polls suggesting that 97 to 98% of working climate scientists accept the evidence for human-induced climate change.
Right. I was glad to see that.
I'm going to have Dr. Stephen Schneider on soon. He's a friend of mine from Stanford. He was the co-author of that report to discuss it. And just the other bit of news before we continue, and we have about 7 more minutes. I appreciate your staying with us the rest of the show. I just mentioned at the top of the program there was a news bulletin that two relief crew, cleanup crew members have been killed in the Gulf disaster, raising the tragedy quotient even higher. And there's also been a mechanical, technological setback. Apparently, there was some failure of a robot piece of machinery that has now made the containment cap that was capturing some of that crude dysfunctional. So now we have more oil than ever gushing into the waters as we speak. Just wanted to bring you that information. Go ahead, Ted. I didn't mean to get you off track, but I wanted to get that both those pieces in.
Well, the other thing is that the people probably remember the Republican convention in 2008 with the drill baby drill chants.
Oh yeah.
And the reality was that back then there was majority support, very significant actually majority support. It was maybe 2/3 of the American people said they wanted to expand oil drilling to even more places offshore and of course on land itself too. Well, that's now changed as a result of this BP disaster. It's now maybe 58-59%, I believe, are opposed to expansion, certainly of deep water offshore drilling. Things have changed. So, so I think it's important not to get too caught up in some of this kind of the political stuff, the polls. To me, from what I have seen, what I've observed, I've read, there's a pretty solid majority or near majority, sometimes a large majority of people who want to move in the right direction. And when it comes to renewable energy, polls in terms of support for shifting to renewable energy are very high. It's this is among Republicans, Independents, and Democrats. It's something like 58%, 55% of all Republicans support putting much more resources and investment into renewable energy sources. It's maybe 90% for Democrats and 80-85% for Independents. So, there's a lot of confusion, a lot of smoke that gets blown out by these, the Rush Limbaughs and the, Sean Hannitys and Glenn Becks of the world and the coal companies and the oil companies. They take out their ads and all the rest. But underneath, despite all of that, underneath it, large numbers of people in this country, definitely majority, get it in general on this issue and on the need to move in the right direction. We have to keep operating out of hope, that if we keep doing our work and we keep working with people and organizing and being visible and active, that the change is coming. It is coming. Again, the big issue is it going to be coming fast enough and soon enough? But that's our job to keep pushing for that.
Absolutely. And while you were just mentioning that last piece of information, Ted, I did check my inbox, and sure enough, I just heard back from Diane Wilson. She's in Taiwan now. She said she's there working with some Taiwan environmental activists who are fighting the same company who's polluting my bay on the Gulf Coast. This is from Diane, the activist and shrimper extraordinaire. Mm-hmm. She says it's not just BP polluting. They're pretty much all polluters, with BP being just the worst of the lot and liable to turn the Gulf into an oil hole. And
yep.
She says her trial is July 6th. Didn't you say that's when hers was as well?
That's right. Yeah, I do remember now. She did email me, and she did mention that. Yeah, so
and the courts
have
consolidated.
If I don't go to jail, I'll go to see her trial.
is this coincidence? Or
I think it's coincidence.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
I think it's coincidence.
We'll follow up with both of you, and I hope you'll get the support you need to get the sane outcome, which is that you should not spend any time behind bars, my goodness. And I do need to get one more piece of information in. It's a plug because it is related to what we're talking about. Because my piece has been trying to get, green stories into, mass media outlets. I worked for CBS Radio for many years and then had a green show that you were on, the one on Air America on EcoTalk. That was still, the one on Air America, pretty much the choir, and now we're on the Progressive Radio Network, so probably it's the green choir mostly tuning in as well, which is great, but we need to expand it rapidly. So I've just entered a contest, which may sound kind of crazy, but Oprah Winfrey starting a new network, the Oprah Winfrey Network, along with, it's a Discovery co-owned with Oprah, that's debuting January 1st, 2011. She's looking for new talent, non-celebrity talent, to host a show of their choosing, someone who's passionate, has some personality, and some expertise in their area. So I just have to tell anyone who's out there listening, please go to Oprah.com, click Own Your Own Show. Type my name in, Betsy Rosenberg, and vote often, because there, for some wacky reason, there's no limit to how many times anyone can vote. And so there's people up there with 1, 2, even 3 million votes that, well, some of them are serious contenders, but many of them are not. I'm very serious about this. I only have about 500 votes. Got my video audition tape up there a little late, but I'm hoping that the green community will spread the word, because this is exactly the audience we need to reach. And so this is a plug not for myself as much as, you know, you, Ted, and your work and Diane's work, and bridging that gap between the environmental activists who are my heroes and cheeros and the rest of America, and not making this us versus them, but finally saying this is something we all need to be concerned about. And guess what? There's solutions, and there's passionate, knowledgeable people, you know, leading the sustainability movement in green building and green business and clean tech and green cars and organics and raw food movement, and they're fascinating people. Let's get the green bandwagon out there to mainstream, you know, and a platform like Oprah's could do it. So I had to get that in. I think we're out of time.
Okay. Let me just mention two websites real quick.
Yes,
one, if people want to see more about myself and my writings, I actually do a regular column. I've got a website, tedglick.com, and then again, my organization, ChesapeakeClimate.org.
Thanks so much, Ted. Good luck, and we'll be following up with you. And
thanks,
that does it for this edition of The Green Front. Hope to see you next time. In the meantime, have a great green one, and get active. We need your votes.